Welcome to Interviews for Resistance. We are now into the second year of the Trump administration, and the last year has been filled with ups and downs, important victories, successful holding campaigns, and painful defeats. We've learned a lot, but there's always more to learn and more to be done. In this now weekly series, we talk with organizers, agitators, and educators, not only about how to resist, but how to build a better world. I am Sarah Jaffe, your host.
I'm Cinzia Ruzza. I'm one of the national organizers of the International Women's Strike. I contributed to organize the women's strike last year, and I'm currently working on this year's strike.
This is Tiffy Bhattacharya. I teach at Purdue University. I was one of the national organizers for the International Women's Strike last year, and I am doing the same this year.
Let's start off talking a little bit about this year's strike, what's being planned, and why everyone decided to do it again this year.
I think everybody knows the context of last year's strike, which started with an incredible, an extraordinary level of international coordination between feminists globally. And so in the context of the global violence against women and the inspiration from feminists in Poland and Argentina, in particular, in the way they organized strikes in those countries against femicide, and in Poland against an abortion ban. This year, I think those contexts remain, and in the case of the United States, has been enhanced in a way with Trump's election. So it was a natural conclusion that it would be repeated this year, both internationally as well as nationally.
If I can add something,
of course.
In November 25th, there was also the day against gender violence, the International Day against Gender Violence. And in that day, not in the United States, unfortunately, but around the world, we had some very massive demonstrations. So, for example, in Spain or Italy or Argentina. So the success of this day of mobilization of this international movement on November 25th also gave somehow the impulse to think that it was possible to organize another strike this year.
Let's talk a little bit about the history of women's strikes and the idea of a women's strike, because this is something that's been around for several decades in the women's movement, but is coming back right now in this particular moment.
Women's strikes are not entirely a novelty, although they are to the extent that now it has become a form of struggle that is international widespread, and that is giving identity to this new feminist movement, they are a novelty. So the precedent of the women's strike was in the 70s, the women's strike in Iceland for equal wage, mm-hmm. wages. And what happened is that 2 years ago, the Polish feminist movement decided to retrieve this form of struggle and to organize a women's strike in Poland against the abortion ban, and the same happens also in 2016 in Argentina with the waves of women's strikes and mobilizations against gender violence. So starting from there, then, and especially given the enormous success of these mobilizations and strikes in Argentina and Poland, there was the idea of trying to organize an international women's strike on March 8th. And of course, with experience and time and practice and reflection and so on, the women's strike is acquired also a set of meanings, which are, of course, variable according to countries, but that also have to do, and this I think is somehow a shared presupposition in the international movement, they have to do with the idea that women's strikes are a very powerful way of mobilizing for the feminist movement, because they make apparent not just the victimization of women, but also the power that women have insofar as they are workers who work both in the formal labor market, but also in the social reproductive sphere at home and so on. So the idea that women can strike as women makes evident the kind of work and labor that women perform, that is the labor that sustains life on the planet, but also the power that women potentially have precisely because they do perform this this labor, although this labor is very often not recognized or valued as it should.
Even last year, when this was declared, there was some pushback over the word strike, and because the understanding of the word strike, as it has come to be accepted, is work stoppage at the point of production, and that is a very, very important and powerful, obviously, definition of strike or instantiation of strike. However, the word strike has several others historical applications, and some of which Cinzia just went through. But I think one of the things that we found it very easy to talk about in the context of last year as well as this year is the difference between a workplace strike and a political strike. Mm-hmm. And I think Women's Strike was a very, very important contribution to the legacy of a political strike, because in the context of the neoliberal decline of union density globally, because of the active attack on unions since the 1970s and 80s by the global ruling elite, I think and working class people have either lost or significantly lost the most powerful weapon to strike within the workplace, which is union. Mm-hmm. And so that means that that does not mean, as many people have assumed, that either the working class is dead, have gone away, or does not respond to continuous attacks upon its living conditions and working conditions. Yeah. So I think in that context, a political strike is very, very important, because what we saw, what happened in the on March 8th last year, just in the United States, was it was called a strike. We were very, very dedicated to maintaining the that identification of that word. But what happened as a result was that there was intense political discussion about the relationship between the workplace mm-hmm. and the non-workplace kinds of mobilization. Yeah. And so on the day, what actually happened was three school districts, the Chapel Hill Carborough School District, mm-hmm. The Prince George's County School District, and Alexandria City School District. All three school districts went on strike, and two of those, as you know, are in right-to-work states. Mm-hmm. So this kind, so we strongly believe that in a period where there is loss of power to take action in the workplace, the political strike is a useful way to restart that conversation mm-hmm. and perhaps flow back that power into workplace mobilization.
Yeah, and we've seen the revival of interest in the idea of the political strike, especially in the U.S., since Trump was elected. There were calls for strikes earlier. There were several days without an immigrant last year. And there was things like the Yemeni bodega strike and the New York taxi workers strike that were specifically in response to Trump policies. And so it is interesting in this moment, I guess, that we are seeing a revival of the idea of the political strike, even as unions, again, particularly in this country, but globally as well, are struggling.
yeah, I do think it's very important. Of course, in a sense, this appeals to political strikes or these allusions to political strikes and so on mark the fact that clearly people living in the United States and workers are deprived of one of the most crucial means of struggle and of protest that is usually recognized in other liberal democracies. So I'm not even speaking about insurrectionary forms of struggle. So political strikes do take place in a number of countries. They are legal, they are recognized, and they are a very powerful tool whenever the government seems to be impossible to challenge or to influence in another way. Mm-hmm. So clearly, the fact that there are all these calls for there were, you know, one of the first reactions last year was precisely that of, you know, calling for strikes or also having spontaneous strikes like the bodega strike, the taxi drivers, and so on against the Muslim ban. Clearly, that signaled the necessity to really revise the labor laws in the United States and to give back to the people the power to stop production, to stop circulation of commodities, to stop circulation of people, because this is a key element of any kind of democratic life. So from this viewpoint, I do hope that this appeal that political strikes are having at the, in this moment can actually reopen a political conversation and a political campaign to reform the labor laws and to really rethink in a very deep way what labor rights should look like in the United States, because clearly the United States have one of the worst labor laws, the most anti-democratic labor laws among liberal democracies. It's really a very exceptional situation.
In terms of the political strike, there are two things that I think are really, really important. The first is to claim, as Cinzia said, the idea that that striking is not just about, as they say very narrowly, and this is a term that I think is problematic and we should actually question, mm-hmm. that strikes are not just about bread and butter issues, mm-hmm. as it's normally referred to, right? So bread and butter issues would mean, in a way, questions about working conditions, but only about wage struggles within the workplace, or you know, sort of benefits that it comes with the job. But one of the important things to remember, which is what, you know, questions of women's labor and women's strike is paramount. The thing to remember is the reason people strike is because of the poor conditions of their life, not necessarily they strike because of the job. It is because the job is a means to live their life. Mm-hmm. And when conditions of life are deteriorating, that's when people consider doing something about it in their workplace. And so that is something quite, you know, it's very simple, but it's important to keep in mind that actually it is the lived conditions of working people that either make them think about a struggle against those changing, deteriorating living conditions, and also give them the confidence to fight, because things become so dire that there is only one way left to live with any kind of dignity, and that is to struggle. So this relationship between life and work, I think, is often forgotten by union bureaucracies. Union bureaucracies like to treat the union as sort of another kind of you know, sort of little bit of a salaried little space where, job struggles are negotiated as simply contract negotiations, right? Mm-hmm. But for working class people, it is not about the contract negotiation. I mean, it is in the literal sense, but it is about their lives and lived conditions. And so political strikes, I think, are very important because in the case of either the lack of unions in the workplace or the kind of unions that bind you to that sort of contract negotiation, political strikes talk about a wider world of living and better living. In other words, a political strike brings back into focus bread and roses rather than bread and butter issues. So it gives a wider, deeper context to the meaning of struggle and the gains to be had from struggle and solidarity. So I think particularly in this context, political strikes play that vital role of reminding people between lived conditions of workers and work conditions and how they're both connected and actually necessary to be connected.
Yeah. And just for people who might not know the history, tell us quickly where the term bread and roses comes from.
It's from a poem and a song that was written during this Lawrence strike here in this country, which was mostly written a strike action by women workers, but it came in the and a strike action that won. This Lawrence strike won, but it also came in the wave of strikes and union organizing in the workplace by women, starting from the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire in New York down to actually the first labor unions that sprung up with women in them, organized by very young women immigrants in this country. So that song is a very important reminder of both the power of this concept that we strike for life and life conditions, but also a reminder of the role that women have played in workplace struggles.
Excellent. And so this strike is coming this year in the midst of the Me Too movement. I think it's safe to say that at this point. And so talk about that, this context where there's this renewed conversation about sexual harassment and sexual violence and how that's playing into this year's strike and organizing.
I would say that I think that we should also see a connection between the wave of feminist mobilizations around the world in the past year and a half, and then the explosion of the Me Too campaign. And often the connection is not made, but I do think that the feminist movement of recent years has reopened a space for everybody, for every woman to speak up and to start making clear that she's not available to put up with all the kind of sexual harassment, violence, or abuse that women put up with usually. Clearly, the Me Too moment has been a very important moment in the United States and also internationally, because it has probably made apparent what a lot of women already knew, which is that sexual harassment and violence are really part of the everyday life of the majority of women, either in the workplace or at home or in the streets and so on. Clearly, the denunciation of gender violence does require a collective response. So from this viewpoint, the women's strike is not so much an alternative to the Me Too, not at all, but it's rather one contribution or one attempt to try to give a collective response to the isolation that victimization produces. So the idea is that the step forward after Me Too, after denouncing individually all the harassment and violence that we have suffered throughout our life, there must be also the moment of collective organizing and collective response, because otherwise the structural conditions that enable this sexual gender violence to continue are not challenged, because clearly one of the risks of the current attention on the issues of gender violence is that we will get rid of a few, you know, obnoxious harassers. Some famous and some less famous, and this is all good, of course. I mean, I welcome this moment of catharsis, in a sense, but this is not going to solve any problem. In other words, the real problem is not individual nasty men. The real problem are the structural conditions that create the conditions and the impunity for gender violence and sexual violence. So, and from this viewpoint, for example, speaking of a strike is particularly important, because clearly now we have learned in the past months to what extent women are harassed and abused on as women in the workplace. But this clearly has to do with the way the workplace is organized, and it has to do with the labor relations more generally. It has to do with the hierarchical nature of labor relations within the workplace, with the lack of power that the workers have, and also from this viewpoint, the lack of unionization, lack of labor rights in mm-hmm. the States clearly create further conditions for gender violence, because women are going to be constantly afraid to speak up against the abuse of a colleague or of a employer. Precisely because they don't feel they have any kind of protection. They don't feel that they have any kind of organizing collective infrastructure that can actually protect their interest. So from this viewpoint, this is why we are broadening also the scope of what we mean by gender violence and addressing a set of issues with the strike that are not immediately perceived, commonly perceived as related to gender violence, but that for us are actually the structural social relations that do enable or even promote gender violence.
Right. And I'm just going to add three very specific things to the Me Too moment that I think March 8th is concerned with. I think the first is, and this is the beginning of why we addressed Me Too in our organizing. The first is, when last do you remember seeing discussions of work conditions in the New York Times repeatedly? That's what Me Too has done. We have never seen so many articles in major media outlets about working conditions of women. Yes, it is. It has been mostly about sexual violence against women, but it has actually exposed how dictatorial and brutal the workplace is for most women, but also for most people. So this is, I think, a tremendous discussion. I have not seen discussions of working conditions to this extent. Of course, you know, the liberal media doesn't call it working conditions, but we all know that this is a discussion of workplace conditions. And this is a very, very welcome development that for the first time in many, many years, we are seeing questions being raised about what it means to be a worker in this country. So that's mm-hmm. the first. The second is, I think, a realization that was limited first to, you know, sort of socialists and radicals in this country, but has mm-hmm. now began to become common sense. And that is that we all know that since the, you know, early part of the 20th century, you know, St. Lawrence strike was what, 1912, to now, there has been an undoubtedly marked increase in women's rights and women's participation in the public sphere and the mm-hmm. sphere of work. Okay, it doesn't matter, you know, that there's been tremendous backlash to those rights, you know, to reproductive justice, mm-hmm. to actual wages, and so on. But if we consider the lives of our great grandmothers in any country and to our own lives, I think we can say we are in a better place. I certainly don't want to go back to the 1890s as a woman in any part of the world. So we have, in a way, through struggles, improved our lives as women. But on a parallel track, I think what has happened is the rights of workers have declined precipitously, particularly since the 70s and 80s with the rise of neoliberalism. So now we have a contradictory situation where our rights as women has improved over the years in a certain sense, but the rights of workers as a whole has declined, which means that in workplace situations, it becomes that women particularly are very vulnerable as workers, because that's where the oppression as women and the declining conditions as workers come together. So, but the solution that capitalism has offered us is because you can improve as a woman, then it is, you know, every woman for herself. So the solution offered to bad conditions of life and work for women has been, of course, lean in, that you can improve and you can become a CEO. So that's the second kind of development. And the third, which I think is very significant for our purposes, is the fact, how do we then fight back? So the reason there's been so much talk of fight back is precisely, I would say, because the conversation is about working conditions, Me Too conversations, right? Because we all know domestic violence exists to a horrible, horrific extent, both in the United States and globally, right? But the advantage of a workplace discussion in this situation is that there are witnesses and there are people who have experienced the same thing because they're your co-workers under the same disgusting rapist boss, right? Because there are no co-wives, right? Under the regime of a violent, abusive husband, there are no other women in the house who go through, you know, marital rape, etc. So you feel that you are the silent witness, or, you know, in case you speak up, you are the only one speaking up against the conditions within the domestic sphere because it is private. But in the workplace, you feel this, finally feel this confidence with Me Too, that me and Kenesha and Sally and everybody else have gone through the same thing with Harvey or, you know, whoever, Kevin. So, so there is a collective confidence because you've been through this collective experience. And this is why I think the voice of the Me Too campaign is amplified, because it comes from a collective place of resistance.
Tell us about the organizing for this year's strike. What's planned where so far, and about the international solidarity work going on as well.
So internationally, I have been on a few phone calls with the international organizing, and it's actually going really well in various parts of the world, notably Italy, Spain, Poland, Argentina, and various other places in Latin America. In the UK, where I was last month, it's called the core organizing center is called the Women's Strike Assembly, and they are doing fabulous work in linking up March 8th with the ongoing discussions and organizing for a university-wide strike of faculty that's coming up. So they are making contacts with faculty members across the UK to coordinate strike action, and the organizers in the UK are tireless in going to various strike meetings, etc., and doing it. And the most amazing thing is that because it's organized by women and feminists, they all of these actions globally have some similar features. Like, for instance, when they organize something, they always have childcare, and they always have you know, they always, and one of them said that it's not childcare like, you know, ordinary left meetings where it is a piece of paper and a bunch of broken crayons. It's actually for children, it's actually with food and innovative games for kids to play. In other words, to actually be happy and occupied while their moms are politics. So these are some of the most, you know, hilarious but absolutely inspiring features that all of this organizing has have in common internationally. In the U.S., and I'll let Cynthia speak to some of the specifics. So the more ambitious plan for us this year, in a way ambitious, but also in a way very, very modest, is actually to build from what we managed to initiate only as a conversation last year, the question of a political strike, to actually put that forward in a slightly more concrete way and to call for a 1-hour work stoppage. So right now across the country, that on March 8th, we will stop work for 1 hour as women in order to show the bosses and their backers in the White House that because we produce the wealth in society, we can also stop producing that wealth and stop society from running. So it's a symbolic reminder of our power as women and workers. So we are working with various unions to make that happen.
The organization of the mobilization. So first of all, we have reactivated the a national planning committee that is basically a network of various activists across the country who are volunteering their time and their work towards the strike. We had in New York an NYC launch of the public launch of the women's strike with a wonderful panel that was featuring some really incredible speakers. And in particular, we had the reports from the victory of the workers of the Hilton in Stamford, Connecticut, who managed to win their battle for unionization and who are now considering whether they could actually call for an actual strike, a work stoppage on March 8th in their hotel. We had, for example, Ginette Vizguerra, who also won a very important battle for her right to stay in the United States against the attempt of deporting her. So in this sense, this event, for example, gave a bit the sense of the kind of energy, but also the kind of women that the women's strike is trying to organize. So especially working class women, migrant women, who are not just participating in the strike, but also, you know, waging a lot of struggles and fights in their workplace against ICE and so on, and sometimes actually winning something and showing this way that that collective action actually does get the goods sometimes, in the sense that it is possible to win. So with this spirit in New York, we are working on the 1 hour strike and discussing with labor organizations, both unions and worker centers, to see what in what way it is possible to organize an hour work stoppage. And we will also have rally and march that will follow the 1 hour work stoppage. We think we will have demonstrations and marches and walkouts in most of the biggest cities in the States. So we organizers are already working on the strike in LA, in the Bay Area, in Portland, in Philly. So we are also receiving a lot of contacts, emails, messages from people who are interested in who read, for example, the article we published in The Guardian calling for a strike in the United States this year, and who are interested in getting on board. As usual, this is an entirely voluntary effort that is really based on the grassroots organizations. It is self-funded. People are, are volunteering their time and their work. But in a sense, this is also the beauty of it, in the sense that around the organization of the strike, mm-hmm. we are somehow consolidating an area of anti-capitalist feminism that is offering, in my view, an alternative to the kind of corporate and leaning feminism that has been dominating in past years. And I think that there is the political space and desire for this, at least judging from the response that a lot of activists, feminist activists around the country are giving to the idea of organizing a new strike and the enthusiasm they are putting into this project.
And of course,
those who want to get on board can contact us through the website or the Facebook page and organize a strike in their city.
Interviews for Resistance is a project of Sarah Jaffe with assistance from Laura Fayebois and support from the Nation Institute. You can find more information at necessarytrouble.org. Thanks for listening.